So we are on Sadi Ches Amud Beis, the fourth line from the top. Everybody with me? I saw Amar Rav. Now we're back to the general topic of the Mashiach and when the Mashiach will come, what it will be like, sort of. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav. Rav said, Ein ben David ba, ad she tispashet malchus harusha al Yisrael, tisha chadashim. Mashiach will come only after the evil empire spreads and rules in an evil way over the Jewish people for a period of 9 months. Shenamar, as it says, Lachain, and this is a pasuk in Micha, Lachain yitnam biyad ad es yolda yolada, they will be given at the time when birth happens, v'yeser achav yeshuvan al b'nei Yisrael, and the rest of the brothers will sit upon the b'nei Yisrael. The context of the pasuk is such that the Gemara darshins this, Rav darshins this, to refer to the time of the Mashiach, that is yolada yolada, when new birth happens, and that'll be a 9 month period during which Yeser Achav Yeshuvim al B'nei Yisrael, the evil brothers will sit upon B'nei Yisrael. So that's an interesting teaching worth reflecting about. The idea that when Mashiach will come, only after 9 months of rule by an evil empire. So 9 months is obviously the period for the gestation of a child, 9 months of pregnancy. And so the analogy here is just like pregnancy yields a child after 9 months, so too the occupation of an evil empire will yield after 9 months the birth of a new era. That's the analogy. Now, at a superficial level, and here I speak as a male, not a female, and so I solicit and welcome the insights of those women around the Zoom table who have had children. But, I mean, again, speaking as a male, it just seems that the metaphor on the one hand seems apt, and on the other hand seems striking or maybe disturbing, because one might argue that the fetus occupies the mother over the course of pregnancy. Just like there is this external force, malchus, that comes and occupies the mother's body for a period of 9 months until which time childbirth happens. So what do you think? Is that a fair analogy, not a fair analogy? And what's ultimately the point of the teaching? I'd like to hear your opinions, especially those of the women who've had children around our Zoom table. Any thoughts? Howard, you're not a female as far as I know. So let me see if there are any women who have any insights. Lynn, are you coming to say something? You're on mute.
Hello.
Yeah.
During pregnancy, your body is doing things differently. Things are happening to it. It's distorted. There's a lot of stuff outside your control. I mean, the body has a lot of stuff outside your control anyway, but there's a building up which creates distension and discomfort and
That's why I say there's an occupying force in a way.
But it's the difference is that you know there's an end to it. You know that the end is a positive thing that's worth going through all this for, whereas during an occupation of an enemy force, you don't know when that's going to end and you don't know what's going to happen at the end. So unless you have this prophecy, that's just a devastating thing that you don't have that same investment in it. You just wish it was over, whereas although there's a point in pregnancy where you also wish it was over, you know, there's a definite ending point of a
anticipation. Right. So my question to those of you who had children, women who've had children, is, have you ever felt during the course of pregnancy that there really isn't occupying force in your body and that it's really extremely difficult for you? I mean, obviously there are times when you see the ultrasound and you're really excited. Obviously, maybe that's most of it. I'm just wondering, is Rav, who's a male, obviously, is he getting something right about the experience that some women may sometimes, if even only rarely, have in the course of their 9 months of pregnancy, of gestation? That's my question.
I think so.
Just hearing about the forces just made me think about Rivka and the Parsha, where she had two in her womb, and they were certainly forces.
Right.
That's
right.
What I'm thinking.
Right. And if Esav was Esav HaRasha, as I said, previous to our Torah, like his second name, then maybe the Malchus HaRashar really would apply.
Yes.
So I leave that for you to ponder. But the key point to my mind is that the Hevle Mashiach, that is the trauma that will occupy Jewish people before the Mashiach, the metaphor here is that it's like childbirth.
Well, we use the word Hevle. I mean...
Yes, exactly. Same word. Yes.
Yeah. We always use that word. So it's the birth pangs.
Pangs of the Mashiach. So that's what I'm saying.
I think that's a very potent metaphor that, isn't a new idea.
That's exactly correct. It's called birth pangs of Mashiach. And Rav is taking it from this pasuk in a literal metaphorical sense, which is to say, it's like the 9 months. And that's what he sees from this pasuk. And a person of faith would be like the expectant mother who knows after these 9 months, the Mashiach is going to come and wonderful things will happen. So, I think to press the metaphor of the birth pangs of the Messiah, which is what this is, Hevle Mashiach, and we'll see, by the way, how the Gemara uses that phrase in the next Gemara. We haven't had it before. Next few lines of the next piece of the Gemara it's used. There's a certain force to that metaphor. I mean, in Rav's reading, it's 9 months of Hevle Mashiach. It really is very much modeled after the challenge of childbirth. So I really find that very, very interesting. And the last, following on that metaphor of 9 months, so the birth pangs, that is the actual childbirth, is obviously the point of pregnancy, or this end of pregnancy, which is by far the most painful and trying, and that is what will hold true for the coming of the Mashiach. There will be 9 months of occupation, so to speak, of Malchus HaRashah, and then there will be this cataclysmic war, Chemes Gog u'Magog. There will be terrible things happening at the very, very end. So there's a certain strictness to the analogy or to the metaphor of Hevle Mashiach. 9 months, and then the end will be Tzirei Leida in Hebrew, the pains of childbirth, which are very, very excruciating from what I'm told. And that will be like the right before the Mashiach's coming, there will be these Tzirei Leida, tremendous pain. So I think Rav is making a really interesting point, way of looking at this, particularly with the metaphor of the 9 months, which he gets from this pasuk. Howard, I stymied your comment before. I'm not sure if it's still relevant, but I wanted to hear from others.
Okay. As a man, I don't like the idea, not necessarily the 9 months, but I think that another attribute of birth is somehow women are willing to go through it again, even though it was so terrible. There's kind of a... again, I only hear this, that there's kind of a forgetfulness of that pain, because if anybody really was able to feel that amount of pain and it would stay with them, they might never go through it again. So I think that it doesn't sever the relationship, that the relationship and the idea isn't lost. So therefore, even though God put us through such a difficult thing, we're still willing to go through more with him because we somehow forget that terrible pain. And also that the pain does yield to a great result, which also may be helpful to soften the blow. So I look at, I don't think that you mean literally that the goal is going to be 9 months, but the analogy is definitely that. But that the other aspect of the pregnancy and how a human can survive
that's
that.
That's a very interesting point. I have two comments about it. Number one, once the Mashiach comes, we're not going to go through Hevelei Mashiach ever again. So that part of the analogy, unlike childbirth, where a woman may have multiple children, that's not going to happen in the case of the Mashiach. But one point you're making, I think, is really worth reflecting about, which is that once the Mashiach comes, we'll forget about Hevelei Mashiach. As once we are, you know, saturated with the glory and beauty of the Messianic era, then we're not going to focus on the trauma that got us there. And I think that is true. It's a wonderful point about the analogy to Hevelei Mashiach and to childbirth, is that once, now again, I solicit the input of women. I'm acutely aware of my limitations as a man in this context. But I'd be interested in knowing, and maybe you could speak up, those of you who have had children, to what extent one forgets the pain of childbirth as a child grows older and one is engaged with raising the child. Mashi says, I don't think a woman forgets. I don't mean forget. Obviously, they remember it intellectually. But to what extent does the trauma continue? Or is that left behind in the context of having a wonderful little baby gurgling and cooing at you as you're coddling it?
I don't think you ever really forget, you know, what you went through. But the joy of looking ahead to another child being born makes you sort of forget or dull the pains that you've had before. The joy overtakes everything else that has happened before.
Right. I think we need to distinguish between cognitive memory and emotional memory. And the cognitive memory is certainly there. You don't forget. You remember. The question is how sharp the emotional memory is. And it could be the emotional memory is mitigated by the emotional experience of joy.
Well, there is a physical component too that I've read that once the baby is born, there's such an incredible rush of feeling, maybe because the pain is over, and a combination probably having to do with endorphins or whatever. There's a chemical that the relief and it feels so good that it's done. So there's a physical that can help you forget too, because it feels so good once the
That's immediate. That doesn't last. That in itself, those endorphins stop flowing after a period of time. So that doesn't last forever.
You're too busy. Once the baby comes to the world.
Busy, right.
Right.
Too busy to remember.
You forget very quickly.
You're
yeah.
so overwhelmed that too you much can't explore that.
Yeah, right. I hear that.
But each experience is different. Yes. And some are harder than others. And, the recovery, the physical and the emotional recovery is different for different people and for different.
I think you're making a very good point. I mean, overgeneralizing. I mean, yeah. Obviously, different women have many different experiences of childbirth. You know, it depends upon how difficult it was and the person involved. So we are generalizing. Maybe that's the nature of overall teachings here. But yes, obviously different. And not just different women have different experiences, but different births by the same woman could be very, very different. You know, that I know
very,
indirectly.
Very different experiences.
My own experience.
Yes. And, one was much more difficult than the other. So I don't think you forget, but like what my mom is saying is true. And that could be part of the metaphor too, because you're so involved in the next step. There's so much going on, you know, whether it's taking care of the baby or if it's, you know, whatever the new changes will be with a new era of redemption. But you're so busy with the new event that is such a huge change that you can't dwell on that pain or trauma. Some women really need to process it later because you don't even have the moment to think about it. It's you're just
right
into the next.
Right. Okay. In any case, I think if you don't mind a pun, this is a very pregnant metaphor on the part of Rav. Oh, sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh.
Sorry. Please forgive me. I think there's a lot here, and it's worth reflecting about. Okay, let's continue. Amar Ula. Now, the next series of teachings, which are all linked, are really quite fascinating, and we need to think about them. Amar Ula. Ula said, Yaisi, may the Mashiach come. V'lo ichmani. And I don't want to see him, though. Let him come. I just don't want to be around. Dechein Amar Rabba. Yaisi v'lo achmine. Let him come. I just don't want to see it. Rav Yosef Amar, Rav Yosef, contrarily, said, Yesi, let him come, the aski emei ibizocha, de esiv betula de kufisa de chamre. May I sit in the shadow of the excrement of his donkey. How's that? How's that for a pretty pungent metaphor? In other words, let him come. I don't care how bad it is. I'm ready to sit in the shadow of his excrement of the donkey, not even of the donkey. So that's pretty interesting. So the Gemara, you know, asks why that is, and we're going to look at, obviously, the Gemara's own explanation for it. But before we get into the Gemara's reading of this, and it's obviously crucial to understand it, I just want to think for the moment about what is this Yesi v'lo achmine? Like, what does that tell you? In other words, let him come, I just don't want to see it. What is it? How do you parse that? How do you interpret this? Yeah, I really want him to come, I just don't want to be a part of it. It's paradoxical. If you're so interested in Mashiach coming, why don't you want to see him come? Right? Wouldn't you say it's paradoxical? Why would somebody not want to experience the coming of the Mashiach if he's looking forward to it? So, we'll learn the Gemara in a second, but just the parsing of it is the following, that the Messianic era is great. The process whereby the Mashiach comes will be so painful that I don't want myself to experience. If you think about some of the great revolutions, yeah, there will be some suffering. Yes, as Joe said, that's it. That's the point. That's really where the Gemara goes. The Chevle Mashiach, there will be great, as I mentioned, great suffering at Sirei Leida at the time of the Mashiach's coming. And Ula and Rava or Rabba, it's not clear who that is, didn't want to be a part of it. And if you think back to some of the great revolutions in world history, like the French Revolution, a lot of guillotining going on around at that time. And I'm not sure that I would have wanted to have seen it or be a part of it. Lots of death, lots of guillotining, lots of bloody warfare. Even if the end result of the French Revolution, one could argue, is very, very beneficial. Take a look at the American Revolution. Lots of people were killed in the Revolutionary War. Now, the end result was wonderful. Doesn't mean you want to be a part of it. Take the Civil War. The end result, the freeing of slaves, is a brilliant, brilliant result of the Civil War, emancipation. But the process whereby that great result was achieved was indescribably bloody. And so what we have here is a distinction between the era and the processes which brought about the era. The Messianic era, Yesi, let the Mashiach come. We need the Mashiach to be here. Just that the process is too painful. I really don't want to be present during the process of the Mashiach's coming. I'm looking at some of the chats. Elianis, could the Mashiach be a woman if the parallels are Mashiach? An interesting thought. Eliana, thank you for that observation. In any case, I think that's the way to parse the Gemara. The Chevle Mashiach versus the Messianic era itself. Now let's see how the Gemara takes it. Now, by the way, Rav Yosef, if you take that parsing, why was Rav Yosef saying, I'd rather be there anyway? Like, what's Rav Yosef's argument? Why would he want to be present? In other words, it sounds like Ula and Rava or Rabba have a pretty compelling argument. They wouldn't want to be present during the bitter process that leads to the Mashiach. Why would Rav Yosef want to be present? Why would he want to torture himself? Because how do you understand Rav Yosef's position? Now that we've explained the other position, it seems so cogent. How would you explain Rav Yosef's position? Howard, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, we can go back to the prior example of childbirth, that, you know, the risk-reward benefit, and depends on your personality. Some people, you know, are willing to have the pain to experience the glory, and some people will say, okay, now I just keep it simple. You know, the people that move to Israel, people don't move to Israel. It's harder to be moved in Israel to uproot yourself and to go through some of the struggles. But the benefit that they feel of bringing the way toward Mashiach and being part of Jewish future are worth the struggle.
Hang on a second. I mean, Rav Yosef is saying, I want to be present during Chevle Mashiach. That's what he's saying. I want to be present even during the travails of the birth of the Mashiach. Why would he want to be present for that? Lynn? Howard? What's that?
There's something.
I want to appreciate the Gula even more.
So skip the Chevle Mashiach and jump into the Gula. That's my question. Yes, Lynn?
There's something very potent and rewarding about being part of a process, being part of the struggle. And the reward is more appreciated.
Good. I that's a wonderful. You froze. I think it's my internet, which is not doing too well. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay. I stopped hearing Lynn. I don't know if Lynn finished speaking, but my internet is not doing too well today. But in any case, think about what something we can relate to even more. The Israel Independence War, the war that founded the State of Israel, which we can relate to more. I mean, it's not necessarily in our lifetimes. It's not in my lifetime either, believe it or not. It's before I was born. But if that's imaginable to you. One can understand, if you really believe in something and you think it's incredibly important, then as Lynn was saying, you might want to sacrifice to be a part of that great movement which brought about such an extraordinary result. You might want to be a part of the War of Independence and even suffer because you believe in the ultimate goal. So that's one way to think about the Mashiach and being a part of Chevle Mashiach. However, don't be too sold too quickly by my words, because what's the difference between fighting in the Israel Independence War and being a part of Chevle Mashiach, as Rav Yosef describes it? As a warrior, as a soldier during the War of Independence, you played a crucial role in liberating.
I lost my internet connection.
That was you. Okay. You played a crucial role in bringing about the new state of Israel. However, would Rav Yosef, sitting in the shadow of the excrement of the donkey, have played any pivotal role in the bringing about of the Mashiach? Not clear. So it's not as simple as I made out. Anybody have any further thoughts about that? So the question is, how much are you willing to pay to be a witness to history? Even if you're not a player in the making of history, there is a feeling of greatness if you've been a part of history. That your life has been expanded, has been the scope of your life has been broadened by being a part of an historical event. And I think that even if you don't play any role or any significant role in the unfolding of history, just being a part of it enriches your life. I mean, you can think back to your own life history and the extent to which you were a part of any historical events. But I know, for example, myself, I happened to have been present in Russia leading a seminar during the putsch, which overthrew communism. Now, I can assure you that I played no role in it. I was in a camp in Zvenigorod, which is a suburb of Moscow. So I played no role in Yeltsin and the tank and the whole story. But being there somehow expanded my life, being a part of some great historical event. And that's all the more true if the historical event is nothing less than the coming of the Mashiach. And as a faithful, believing, committed Jew to the Jewish people, what could be more expanding than that? So I can hear of Yosef saying, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make a big difference. I want to be a part of the events which brought about the great, great aspirations of the Jewish people for the Messianic era. I want to be there. I just want to be a part of it. I want to see it. I remember as a child, watching the moon landing on television, or watching the aftermath of Kennedy's assassination on television. I wasn't present, but I was talking to my parents about this. Just looking at it, watching it, was just an extraordinary, you really felt, everybody remembers where they were when they first heard that Kennedy was assassinated. I remember where I was. I was a little kid in class. I remember where I was sitting in that class a long, long time ago, because great historical events ramify and we feel enlarged by those historical events. So I hear what Rav Yosef is saying. Does it ring, what I'm saying, does that ring with you? Does that resonate with your way of thinking about things? I'd like to hear your opinion. No comments? Bert asked, do we have a choice in being part of Chevle Mashiach as opposed to being part of a war? No, we have no choice. You're absolutely right, Burdett. I don't think anybody has a choice. We are born when we're born, and we live where we live, in the era that we do, in the geographic location that we do. But this is just comments. In other words, this is Ravo or Ula's way of saying how terrifying Chevle Mashiach will be. Okay, yeah. So much.
One thing.
Yes.
I think it depends. To me, it just depends on how intense, if I'm in that era, how intense I experience the Chevle Mashiach. If it's very intense, if it's like living through Auschwitz, I don't think I want to go through it. On the other hand, if it's something less, even if it's very uncomfortable, it might be worthwhile being part of. So it really depends on how intense it is.
Absolutely true. And we will see various descriptions of the Chevle Mashiach. They're not pretty. And everybody has their own, I think, level for the tolerance of pain. For some people, I'm not sure if to what extent there really is an objective measure of pain, but there clearly are subjective measures of pain, and different people experience the same, like going to the dentist. I just went to the dentist this morning and I had my teeth cleaned. Some people say cleaning of teeth is like is more painful than root canal. Some people say, yeah, okay, but it's not root canal and it's not so bad, which is sort of the way I felt. Maybe it depends upon your dentist and what tools he uses. I still feel excused a little cartoon that I vividly recall from the New Yorker. Picture of a guy sitting in a dentist chair. Little guy sitting in a little dentist chair. Then there's this gigantic dentist with this humongous syringe holding it over this little guy's mouth. And the dentist saying to this little guy, this might pinch a little. So everybody's pinch is a little different, I guess, right? So, yeah, so you're right, Michael. I agree with that. But, there is an objective measure, but there are subjective measures too. Howard, yes.
There's also, if you think of Viktor Frankl's description of, you know, what he went through in the Holocaust, there's also how different people react to the same stressors in life. So for some people can overcome it with meaning in his case, and for some people they can't survive. It's the same situation, but the individual reacts differently.
Right. Okay, let's continue with the Gemara. Amale Abaya Laraba, or Rava, it's not clear what the correct textual reading is. My time up. Why is it that you so resist being present bechevle Mashiach? Ilema mishum chevlo shel Mashiach, is it because of the tremendous, tremendous travails and pains attached to the coming of the Mashiach? V'hatanya, did we not learn? Shalu Talmida ves Rabbi Eliezer. I think it should be Rabbi Eliezer, not Rabbi Elazar. Tana. Ma yasa adam v'yinatzel mechevlo shel Mashiach. What should people do if they want to be saved from chevle Mashiach, from the torment, the travails of the advent of the Mashiach? Answer. Yasok b'Torah b'gmilas chasadim. If somebody studies Torah diligently and engages in Gemilas Chasadim in a very serious way, then that person will not suffer during Chevle Mashiach. Umar, but you, Rava/Rabba, HaTorah, Gemilas Chasadim. You don't need to worry. You're a master of Torah, and you're a master of Gemilas Chasadim. You will be protected from Chevle Mashiach. So why are you so worried? Why are you saying, let him come, I don't want to see him? Like, you're not going to suffer. You're a master of Torah and you're a master of Gemilas Chasadim. Which, by the way, there's a Musar Haskel here. Any of us who want to be saved from Chevle Mashiach, this is what we're supposed to do. Learn a lot of Torah and do a lot of Gemilas Chasadim. So that's the secret. That's the secret potion. So something for us to think about and to work on. But in any case, so what was Rava/Rabba's answer? Amar Lei, Shema Yidgrom Hachet. Sin may cause me to suffer, even though originally I didn't deserve it. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi Rame, because Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi asked the following question. This, by the way, brings us to this week's parsha. I've always said that there's a special hashgacha practice in our shir, and our shir often bumps into parsha or things going on in the world. So lo and behold, this our shir bumps into this week's parsha. Hashem promised Yaakov, "Hinei anochi imcha u'shmarticha b'chol asher teilech. I'm with you, and I will protect you wherever you go." Uksiv, and it says in this week's parsha, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzer Lo. Yaakov was very frightened when he saw the convoy of 400 of Esav's men approaching him. It's this week's parsha. So why was he afraid? Hashem had promised him that he would protect him. What was the fear? So the Rava/Rabba answered, Shahaya Misyare Shema Yigrom Hachet. He was afraid that sin will cause a reversal. In other words, although Hashem had promised Yaakov that he would take care of him, that promise is valid only up to the point that Yaakov behaves the way Yaakov always did. But if Yaakov sinned, then the promise no longer holds. Hashem is in effect saying, Yaakov, I promise you that I would take care of you on condition that you be tzaddik. But if you're no longer such a tzaddik, I'm not going to take care of you. In the same way. So what Rava/Rabba is saying is, yes, I know that I learned Torah with Asmada. I spend a lot of time learning Torah, and I'm doing a lot of Gemilas Chasadim. But even though I have all those chusim, all those merits for all those mitzvahs I do, if I sin, that's it. So what Rava/Rabba is teaching based upon Rav Yaakov Bar Idi is that there are no guarantees in life, and that even a great tzaddik can suffer if the life he or she leads is marred by sin. You can do all the good deeds in the world, but if you do some really serious sins, then you're not protected. Which is, of course, in general, something for all of us to think about. We dive into Hashem, we ask Hashem to protect us, but we have to do our part. We have to do our bit. And our bit is to prevent ourselves from sinning. And if we're not successful in that, then we render ourselves vulnerable to punishment in this world and Chevel HaMashiach in the world to come. So what exactly was Yaakov worried about? Like, what sin might he have committed? I mean, like, what was he worried about? So the Ramban says in the Parsha that the sin that Yaakov was worried about was that he had entered into a bris, into a covenant with Lavan. He entered into a partnership with a man like Lavan, not exactly a tzaddik hadar. And he felt that that, upon further reflection, may have been a failure on his part. Why is he entering into a relationship with such a creep? How can he partner, have a covenant, a bris, with somebody like Lavan? And so that was the chet